This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Joining us right now, a man who is in that documentary and lived through all of that with Michael Jordan and also was Boomer Esiason's former agent. This is David Falk, Jordan's former agent as well. David, good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
My pleasure. It's always fun to be on with Boomer.
David, great to talk to you this morning. Now, have you seen the whole documentary?
I've seen 8 episodes. The last two, I think, are for your eyes only. I think they have a CIA, dossier until they come out publicly.
Okay. So, kind of interesting that this is coming out 22 years after the fact. Why did it take so long to come out?
Well, you know, Michael's a really interesting individual. On the court, as you watch in the doc, he's supremely confident, cocky, arrogant, dominating. And off the court, he's a very, very low-key guy, and I don't think he wanted to, sort of promote himself. The league has been asking for almost probably 30 years. They had all this footage. They want David Stern, urged me for many years to turn this into a doc, and only recently did Michael feel comfortable.
So one of the things that has surprised me is how open and honest and raw Michael Jordan has been during this documentary, because I've never seen that from him in all these years. Of course, he's been very guarded and said certain things to make sure that he wasn't making headlines outside of his play. Did you expect to see this open and honest Michael Jordan in this documentary?
Absolutely. If you wanted a trailer, a preview of the doc, you got to go back to his induction into the Hall of Fame. I would have thought, just like his two-word press release when he came out of retirement, I'm back. I thought he was going to get up in Springfield and say, thank you very much, and sit down. And instead, he gave a very insightful talk about what he did to keep himself motivated throughout his long career. And a lot of people misunderstood it, that he was angry, and he wasn't. I think Michael became probably the most successful athlete, most popular athlete of all time, because he had the unique combination of being incredible for the things he did on the court and totally credible, totally believable off the court. And so in doing this, this is not a Hollywood version. This is not a scripted version. This is just him sitting there, sharing his views, sharing the hurt he felt when he got frozen out of the All-Star game, and his complete disbelief in the cockamamie response that Isaiah made to not shaking hands. Even some of the stuff that Scottie said with the headache. I mean, he just giving you how he really felt. If he wasn't going to do that, it would have been nonsensical to approve the doc.
Talking to David Falk, former agent of Michael Jordan, and of course, my former agent. I was right there when you were recruiting him back then, and I didn't realize that this goes all the way back to 1985. And obviously now that we reflect back on it and we watch it, we see there is a genuine hatred between Isaiah and Michael Jordan. And I thought one of the funniest aspects, or not funny, or one of the more telling aspects of all of this, David, was watching Michael watch Isaiah try to explain the lack of a handshake. He still doesn't believe it.
Listen, we all make mistakes, it's not so much that Michael hated Isaiah. Isaiah was incredibly jealous of Michael, because he had his own shoe. He was getting so much attention, and he made dramatically more money. And, it sort of spawned a hatred in Isaiah of agents. Isaiah was one of the most anti-agent players there were. And I used to tell him, it's not the problem as an agent. You just have the wrong agent. And You know, and so he froze him out of the All-Star game that very first year in 1985. That was Michael's rookie year. The All-Star game was in Indy. And to this day, he won't acknowledge that he froze him out of the game. And to his credit, finally, 2 days ago, Isaiah finally came out and said, yeah, it was a mistake not to shake hands. And Lambeer followed that up by saying, no, it wasn't a mistake not to shake hands. They were, you know, whining. Who cares? I mean, it's just the right, you know, you're a great sportsman. It's the right, you're going to lose games. Very few teams go undefeated. You know, you shake hands and hopefully come back the next year.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Isaiah's reacting to today's world, to the social media world, and how people are reacting to this particular documentary. So they freeze Michael Jordan out of the 1985 All-Star game. So then turnaround is fair play, I guess, and they freeze Isaiah off the Dream Team. How did that go down, and who was part of that whole decision-making process?
There was only one person responsible for that. It was Chuck Daly. My understanding, who's dead, was a great guy and a great coach. And it's my understanding that the guy Chuck really wanted to put on the All-Star game was Joe Dumars, not Isaiah. But he knew he couldn't. They were both his players, and he knew he couldn't put Joe on without Isaiah. And I think he knew that all the players, not just Michael, Magic, Bird, nobody wanted to play with Isaiah. And as Michael brought out in the doc, you know, the environment in Barcelona and in the lead-up to Barcelona was amazing. The practices were intense, some of the greatest basketball ever played. And the guys really bonded, guys you'd never expect. One of the most interesting friendships that grew out of the Barcelona was Patrick Ewing and Larry Bird. They became great buds after Barcelona. And everyone knew that there would be a tension with Isaiah because of his personality. And so Chuck left him off. No one asked to leave him off. No one pushed to leave him off. No one lobbied to leave him off. And clearly he was a great player. You know, regardless of what you think of him as a person, he was a hell of a player. And on his credentials alone, he deserved to play. But they did pretty well without him. They won by an average of 50 points. So I think they did okay.
Talking to David Falk, who is Boomer's former agent, of course, the longtime agent of Michael Jordan on The Fan and CBS Sports Network. What's really curious to me is when you got Michael Jordan as a client. So when exactly, what was your first year working with him?
1984, when he first came out. We basically had represented virtually every Carolina first-round pick from 1977. There's a guy named Tom Legard, 78 was Phil Ford, the player of the year, 79 Dudley Bradley, 80 Michael Okorin, 81 Al Wood went 4, 82 James Worthy went 1, Michael. So Coach Smith recommended agents to the players, and we had the best track record by far of representing rookies in terms of their contracts. And it wasn't that Dean liked us or, you know, it was a social thing. It was pure numbers, and he recommended us to Michael and his parents, and the rest was history.
So you've got this superstar at that point where you don't even realize how big he's going to be. When did you realize personally that you had something more than just the average special number 2 overall pick in the draft?
Well, first of all, come on, it was number 3.
Number 3, I'm sorry, yes, number 3. Number 3 overall pick, I apologize, yes.
I tell you, the epiphany for me, I went after the Olympics. He was amazing in the Olympics. And, you know, Boomer, I don't know if you remember this. When Michael was a junior, which was 84, they're playing Maryland in College Park, and Carolina's going to win the game by about 5 or 6. And with about literally 20, 30 seconds left in the game, the ball squirts out. There's a turnover in the Maryland end. The ball squirts across to half court, and Michael runs down, grabs the ball, looks up at the clock. There's about 10 seconds left, and he cuffs the ball in the crook of his wrist, and he throws down an unbelievable dunk. I, by a fluke, happened to be watching the game with the fathers of James Worthy and Kenny Smith. And we were looking at each other in disbelief. That was sort of the first one, even though Dean excoriated in the locker room for showboating after the game. That wasn't the way they did it. So the joke was, only guy who held Michael Jordan under 20 points ever was Dean Smith, because it was very tightly controlled. And if you think about it, on that team, you know, he had James Worthy, who was the number one pick in 82. Brad Daugherty was the number one pick in 86. Sam Perkins was the number 4 pick his year in 84. Jimmy Black, who played briefly in the NBA. Matt Daugherty from Long Island, who played a little bit in Cleveland. A hell of a team. And so that was my first preview. The second was the Olympics. He was amazing in the Olympics in L.A. The European press nicknamed him Plastic Man because he was so, you know, his athleticism was off the charts. But the real indication for me, I went down to Chapel Hill after the Olympics to meet with Michael and his parents and present my first marketing plan, which was to make him an all-American hero with three companies that I thought represented Americana, McDonald's, Chevrolet, and Coca-Cola. And after the meeting, lasted a couple hours, he goes into the practice gym, Woolen Gym, on Chapel Hill's campus, and he's playing with his idol, Walter Davis, James Worthy, Dudley Bradley, Michael Korn, like Al Wood, tons of pros. And if you had shirt, just, you know, pick up. And if you had no idea who it was, it looked like Kobe Bryant playing against a junior high team. He just dominated the game. And I'm sitting there looking at this thing like, holy, this is freaking Walter Davis, who's amazingly talented, a guy at Michael's position, James Worthy, the number one pick in the draft. And it was like a man amongst boys. I was like stupefied. And I realized, wow, this guy is like way better than anything anyone's seen at Carolina. And the last thing to say is, for me personally, and I watched, I think I missed two of Michael's playoff games, finals, in the entire time he played of the six championships. I think I missed maybe one or two. I saw a ton of his regular season games. Courtside, sat courtside, wasn't like us far away. But all these years later, watching the documentary, you have to literally be legally blind if you think that there's any remote comparison between Michael Jordan and any other player in the last 50 years in the NBA, Kobe, LeBron, you know, whatever. It the stuff he does at both ends of the court, you know, with a team that's really not, you know, forgetting what Jerry Krause says about organizations winning championships, which is the biggest piece of hogwash that I've may have ever heard, you know, the team wasn't that great. Other than Pippen, it was a complimentary team. It wasn't like the Lakers in the mid-'80s that had James Worthy, Kareem Jabbar, Magic Johnson, Byron Scott. It wasn't like the Celtics in the mid-'80s had Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish, Dennis Johnson, Danny Ainge, Scott Wedman, and freaking Bill Walton. You know, it was basically Michael, then Scotty, and a bunch of guys that, you know, that Michael made work. But, you know, I used to tell the owner, you could have Michael and Scotty and have a blind draw of 13 other players from a fishbowl and have a team as good as, you know, I mean, it's for all of Krause's machinations. I mean, and again, you know, the guy's dead, and I love Jerry Reinsdorf, and we have a great relationship with the owner. But, you know, Krause, if you look at Krause's record factually, and they didn't bring this out in the doc at all, okay, but I'm going to give it to you. Rod Thorne, who's one of my dear friends in the NBA. I love Rod Thorne, one of the really most respected, well-liked, you know, executives in NBA history. He drafted Michael in 1984. 85 comes, and Krause comes in, and he drafts Charles Oakley at number 11. Now, there's a guy two picks behind him that did reasonably well in the NBA named Karl Malone. You know, if you're going to draft a power forward, and I love Charles Oakley, you know, love the guy, but in terms of, you know, impact, you know, you ought to draft an impact player in 85. You take Karl Malone. 86 comes, and Doug Collins, the coach, promises Coach K that the Bulls are going to draft Johnny Dawkins as the National Player of the Year and my first Duke client ever. He's currently coaching in Central Florida. You know him well, Boo.
Yeah.
Another ACC guy. And instead, they draft Brad Sellers, who's a complete bust. 87, they took Pippen. Now, Pippen ended up being a great compliment to Michael. Pippen went number 5. They could have dropped to number 11 that year and taken a guy named Reggie Miller, who I think would have been a reasonably good backcourt mate for Michael. Or they could have taken Kevin Johnson at number 7, who's a freaking phenomenal guard offensively, defensively. He's the mayor of Sacramento.
Yeah, no, but you know, the question that I would have, David, is whether or not those guys would be able to play with Michael the way that Scotty did. That's really the question. And nobody can doubt that Scotty and Michael formed a tandem that was special. You're just talking about that. The question that I would have for you, as the agent for Michael Jordan, when you saw the contract that Krause gave Pippen, what was your initial thought about Scotty signing that contract?
Great question. Okay, so, you know, as you know, and first of all, in that era, very, very few players, I mean, a handful at best, ever became free agents. First of all, there was no unrestricted free agency until 1996, so the teams could always match. Very few players got offers. And so most players wanted security. And Scotty on the dock makes it clear he had two people in his house, his father and his brother, in wheelchairs. And he was nervous that if he didn't get security, if he got hurt, he wouldn't be able to provide for his family. So he signed the contract. You know, anytime you sign an extension like that, you know, you're not going to really get full market value getting security. I hate when players do extensions. You know, I had to do an extension for Michael, ironically. You know, my boss, who you know well, Donald L., did Michael's first contract. And even though I was the head of basketball, he never asked me to do it with him. So he did it by himself. It may be the worst contract in the history of basketball. He signed up for 7 years. Only five of them were guaranteed. And he locked him in to a long deal. And Michael wanted to redo the deal. I didn't want to redo the deal. I told him, you're never going to get fair market value until you play it out. But he was so grossly underpaid that after his fourth year, we did another deal. And we got him almost double the next closest guy, which is Patrick. And it still wasn't remotely enough. So he never got paid what he was worth until he became a free agent in 96. Pippen didn't get paid what he was worth. But what the doc really didn't point out, and I was one of the few things I was a little disappointed, is what irked Pippen wasn't that he was the 122nd highest paid player in the league. What really ate at Scotty was the fact that Krause, because of his insecurity, he got zero credit for the success of the team because it had Michael Jordan, who he didn't draft. He wanted to find his own Michael Jordan. So he goes to Europe and he finds, not exactly a sleeper, Tony Kukoc was far and away the best player in Europe. And he fell in love with Kukoc, brought him over, and paid Kukoc before he ever played a game in the NBA way more money than he paid Scottie Pippen. Now, that's what really aided Pippen. It wasn't so much that, you know, other guys in the league were making more, which is true. It was that on his own team, Krause didn't have the sense to understand that with Pippen's very sensitive psyche, that paying Kukoc, who was a nice player, but you can't remotely in any shape or form say that Kukoc made remotely an impact on the Bulls like Scotty did, particularly on defense. They had plenty of shooters. You know, Kukoc is a great shooter, and
But that's what happens in these locker rooms all over the place in every sport. Final thing for me: do they get into the gambling aspect of Michael Jordan and how that, you know, impacted his life and derailed, you know, the Bulls to some extent? Because at least that's what the word is out on the street.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, it didn't derail him. I think it was a distraction. It was a long term distraction. You know, everyone had that Stern comes on and basically says it's complete hogwash that he suspended Michael for 18 months when he retired. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Michael was like almost Teflon. There's very few things people criticized for. The gambling thing was it. And, you know, he loves to gamble. He's an extremely competitive guy. And if he loses $150,000 playing golf, big freaking deal. You know, he wouldn't. If I told him tomorrow, hey, I've got an appearance for you for 5 minutes for $150,000, he left me. It was $1,500,000, he wouldn't do it. He turned down a deal, Boomer, to do a one-day golf appearance when he was in Asia a few years ago for a preseason game with Charlotte. And some woman in the Philippines offered me $7 million for one day for him to play in a golf tournament. And he turned it down. So, you know, yes, he lost money in gambling, and it sort of had a little bit of a black eye for 5 minutes. He apologized, and the thing went away. But any of these Oliver Stone conspiracy theories that somehow it pushed him out of basketball were ridiculous.
You need to get me a deal like that.
I'm working on it. Okay. You got to get your handicap down a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, so now that you intrigued me with that story, what was the largest appearance fee that he did accept, if you could share?
You know, it's interesting because part of the marketing plan, I never wanted to do one-off things with Michael. You know, I wanted everything he did to be part of a long-term deal. By 1991, every deal that I signed him with was at least 10 years. And in 1991, he was 28. You know, he wasn't going to play 10 more years, although he ended up playing into his 40s. And so he never did one-off appearances. But, I mean, he turned down a deal. I brought him a deal 3 years ago for $100 million. And all he had to do was make a one, other than giving his name and likeness, make a 1-2 hour appearance to announce the deal, and he turned it down. And God bless him. You know, he's been so successful. It gives him the opportunity to do whatever the hell he wants or not to do things he doesn't want. And I, you know, I really admire that. He's very, very selective in the things that he wants to be involved in.
David, thanks for your time this morning. Love talking to you. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Boone. Hope you got my birthday text last week.
Yes, I did. And I know I sent your wife, Rhonda, her birthday text.
Exactly. Anytime I forget, you better call me because I'm in trouble with my wife.
Yes, exactly. Have a great day, David. Thanks so much, man.
My pleasure. Thanks.
We'll see you.
That's David Falk, former Michael Jordan agent, of course, former Boomer agent as well. It is Boomer and Geo on The Fan and CBS Sports Network.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.